played?
Yeah.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Yang-Fei from National Taiwan University. And it is my pleasure to present my work with iTalk. And the title of my talk is Operational Satellite Derived Ultra Ocean Thermal Structure for the iTalk Field Experiment and the comparison with the iTalk's observation. And Dr. Ai Ai Ling is my advisor. This schematic shows how to derive upper ocean thermal structure or upper ocean temperature profile, if you wish. Basically, it consists of four elements. First, the depth of 20 degree isotherm D20, which is estimated from satellite sea surface height anomaly as SHA by a two-layer radial gravity scheme, this one. And the SSHA we use is from official real-time Birch SSHA data, which is quarter degree spatial resolution. And then we use this divide D20 to compute D26 by using a climatological ratio between D26 and D20. And for the SST and the mixed layer depths, we use cloud penetrating SST from TMI and EMSA, and climatological monthly mixed layer depths from NRL. So, based on this method, we can operationally estimate the upper ocean thermal structure in the Western North Pacific with a quarter degree spatial resolution and on a daily basis. And during the IOP, we operationally provide a series of 2D maps, including two-layer derived D26 upper ocean thermal structure, upper ocean heat content UHC, and T100, as well as SST and SSHA from the satellite observation. In addition, I also superimpose all accessible real-time in-situ observations onto the daily maps, aiming to provide additional information and a quick comparison with the two-layer estimation. Such observations include algal float, triangle, and drifters, moorings, and even iTalk deployments. And we also have typhoon check, which were from JWC or iTalk's prediction. In addition, every algal profile was individually plotted with the two-layer derived profile, so we can check immediately to see how good the two-layer estimation is. And we also provide a cross section of upper ocean thermal structure under the typhoon check. This is the example from Typhoon Balakas, and we can see that the subsurface changed dramatically. For example, D26 dropped from about 100 meter to 50 meters, a change of 50%, as Malakas was heading north. And here is the cold wake generated by this typhoon. And the values of these five oceanic parameters along the typhoon check, we also provide operationally, which is SST, SHA26, UHC, and T100. So the whole set of figures that I have shown so far were generated every day during the IOP, and I hope these figures are informative and helpful to the iTalk group. Next, I would like to show my preliminary result from the comparison with the Argo EAS NFS motion model from Dr. Dong Sanko and ASPT data from three iTalk flights on these 3 days. And these are the maps of T100 estimated by the two layer show on the left, and by the coast model on the right. Basically, we can see that the T100 estimated by these two model are generally comparable. And we can see that the T100 did not change too much on these 3 days. And on this map, the triangle represent Iago, and the hexagon represent the HPT, which were adopted here, and here. And basically, we can also see that the observations are generally consistent with the pattern estimated by these two models. And this is the SSC comparison. The first column is the observations from Argo and SPT versus coast model. And the second column is versus the two layer, recalling that the SST from the two layer is directly from satellite observation, which is TMI. And the last column is the comparison between these two models. And basically, we can see that either coast model and the two layer is generally in good agreement with the observation. But we can see that the SST from coast model seems to be a little bit scattered. And the average Woodwind square error is about 0.4 degree in coast model, and it is about 0.3 degree in the two layer as comparing with Iago. And the error is a little bit higher as compared with ASPT. And Woodwind square difference between these two models is about 0.5 degree. And here is the T100 comparison. Basically, they are also agree with the observation. And average Woodwind square is about 0.9 degree in the coast model, and the error is a little bit higher to about 1.1 degree in the two layer as compared with Iago. And compared to the ASPT, both model has about 0.5 degree error. So this result suggests that the simple two-layer is of reasonable accuracy, which is slightly less accurate than coast model. But we can still find that the two-layer overestimate the T100, especially when the T100 is lower, and this reason result in the relatively high error in the two layer, and we can and we found that most of this overestimation occurs in this area, the north of 90 degree north, and the reason is that the two-layer model has deficiency in the northern part of the Western North Pacific, so we have to be very careful when we use this data. So for this reason, in the rest of my talk, I would like to introduce my recent work of improving upper ocean thermal structure estimation by using a linear regression method. In this work, I used all of the Argo profile from 2000 and 2008, over 38,000 profile, pairing up with the SSHA data to establish the relationship between the SSHA and the subsurface temperature. And the linear regression conducted here is a function of location, month, and isotherm. It means that for each isotherm at each look, at each grid point, we have one monthly linear regression. And these two maps shows the regression coefficient of D20 in September. And basically, you can see that the slope change varies in space, suggesting that there is regional dependence in the regression. So we use the whole set of the regression. Basically, from D26 to D4, we can also estimate the approaching thermal structure from the SSHA. And here is the result. Apparently, we can see that the T100 estimation has been significantly improved by using regression method. And this table summarizes the T100 error of these three approaches. Basically, the regression method result in lower error of about 0.7 degree error, which is even lower than Dr. Cole's promotion model. So using regression seems to be a promising way for deriving more accurate approaching thermal structure in the Western North Pacific. However, complete validation is needed for confirming this preliminary result. And here is my ongoing work and future plans. The improved approaching thermal structure has been reproduced by using the regression for the ITOP IOP. And this data will be put on our website. And for those who are interested in this data set, you can download from this website. And we are also pleased to upload this data to the other ITOP official data archive, such as EOL or Envalo. For the future, I would like to compare the co-located and coincident IGO and ASBD profile, if available, to evaluate the quality between these two instruments. Second, I would like to estimate the SST cooling by using a mixed layer model, such as PWP model from Dr. Price, with different profile from different models or approaches to see how sensitive the SST cooling to this estimated profile. Finally, I would like to thank ONR and ITOP Group for giving me such a wonderful opportunity to participate in this big experiment. And I really learned a lot from this experiment. And also, I would like to thank all of my lab members for their hard work during the IOP period. And this is my talk. Thank you very much.
I think it's really important to conduct this same analysis, but compared temperature profiles that were taken in places where we know it's a typhoon wake, like from places we had, from places we knew there were wakes, as opposed to outside, because your whole scheme basically assumes a particular type of temperature profile with depth, which is due to the eddies ejecting the thermocline up and down. And in the wake, that's likely to be different. There's also resolution issues. So I think it would be really interesting to see how well you can essentially estimate the thermocline depth for the heat content in a typhoon wake as opposed to other places. Because I'm guessing that if you do those regressions, it'll be a little different there.
Yes.
That would be useful.
Okay.
We have time for a couple more questions. No? Okay, let's move on to the next.
First of all, I would like to thank ONR and everybody for making this experiment possible. It has been a really wonderful experience for me and my team members. And in today's talk, I would like to share with you some of our findings on the ocean precondition, which we think it actually controls or defines the peak intensity of the three cases we study. And this work is done in collaboration with P Peter Black and my team members from NTU. So these are the three cases. This is from Eric, the map. So the first case, Panda P, was category 3 at peak. Mamaka's category 2 at its peak. And Super Typo Maggie was category 5 at its peak. And I would call Maggie a super duper or super of the super typhoons because it was 116 knots. Well exceed the criteria for super typhoon, which was only 120 knots. So Maggie was really very intense. We were really fortunate to have such a case, I think, for the entire team. Personally, that's what I felt. And I would like to show to you, these are the intensification map with Maggie and Fanapi and Malakas, the three peaks, okay, in different categories of intensity. These are the Argo profile which we found the pre-typhoon condition along the intensification track of the three cases. We can see that they are organized into three distinct groups, as Pete suggested earlier. We can see this is the case of Maggie and Fanapi in black, Manakas in red. We can see that their SST are actually similar. All of them are having 29.5 or so SST. The differentiation comes from the subsurface layer that Maggie was having very deep subsurface layer. You can see the D26 reaching more than 120 meters or so. And this is a summary of the from all the Argo profile which we found for the three cases. Basically, all the three cases have similar SST. All are good SSTs, 29.5 to even 30 degrees C, okay, for the pre-typhoon condition. However, once we go to the subsurface, the distinctions start to show. We can see for Maggie, with much deeper upper ocean heat content and depth of 26 degree isotherm, and second was Fanapi, and third was Maggie. And T100 also shows this distinction. So, we then use these profiles to estimate the during storm SST cooling, because that is an important negative feedback for intensification. So this is a schematic which we show. We can see that for any point in the ocean, we can see before the storm coming and with the storm start to the ocean start to be influenced by the intense wind of cyclones. And with the storm center at the location and the back of the storm passing by the location. And basically, this is actually, sorry for the small font, the transit time, you can see, I define this as a transit time, is a function of the size of the storm and the translation speed of the storm. So the smaller the size, the faster the translation speed, the shorter the transit time. And this is actually happened to Maggie's case because it was so small that the transit time was so, the time for the ocean to fill Maggie's, although the wind was so intense, was actually shorter as compared to as if it was a bigger size. So we actually used the Miller-Yamada one-dimensional ocean mixed layer model to compare the cooling of the three cases. So this is Maggie. We see it experience very little cooling during storm cooling. I'm not talking about cold wake. This is during storm cooling as an indication of negative feedback. So it was all very, very slow, small cooling all the way up to category 5. And finally in black, the cooling was stronger and Malakas was the strongest in cooling. So actually this has implication in its peak intensity, as I will be explaining later. So this is my, in Chinese we call blood boiling figure. Or in English I would say this is smashing. In my entire life I've never seen three triangles. I was plotting with my hand when I 20 years ago. I've never seen such a wonderful, the three triangles, the strong wind. So the skew T diagram actually shows this intense wind of Maggie, and we can see another point to see is two profiles are overlapping showing the saturation condition. The atmospheric temperature was about 26 degrees, and the dew point temperature was similar. So basically, we examine all the inner core profiles, we see similar conditions. I'll skip this quickly for Maggie, Malakas, and Fanapi. So basically what we found was this. Atmospheric temperature are typically 26 or 27 degrees. However, the ocean was 29 degrees also. So they are competing. While ocean is still warmer than atmosphere, it actually supplies fluxes to the atmosphere. However, with the cooling induced by the strong winds, with the cooling of the ocean, this is from the 0 degree cooling, 0.5 degree cooling, 1 degree cooling, we can see the decrease in the latent heat flux and the sensible heat fluxes. So basically, as the ocean cools, so now the atmosphere stays 27 degrees or 26 degrees, the ocean 29 degrees. With the cooling of the ocean, it will stop giving fluxes because the ocean cools with the intensification of the wind. So that will define the peak location, because we see that for the Mackey case, the during storm SST was still 29 degrees. Remember, the atmosphere was 27 or 26 degrees. So there was still opportunity for ocean to continue to provide fluxes from the ocean to the atmosphere. However, if you can look at the case of Fanapi, look at the ocean cools when Fanapi's wind was at category 3. Ocean cools to about 27 degrees. That will be similar to the atmospheric temperature. This is the time, the point of which ocean stops to give fluxes to the atmosphere because the ocean is of similar temperature or even colder later on. So that will define the peak. This is what I meant. And the difference in similar for Malakas, it cools much faster. So at category 2, it cools. So this is what I think, that the difference in the ocean precondition controls the amount of cooling, control the speed of cooling, so that it sets the control of flux supply to for the intensification, it defines the peak, or it controls the peak, or contributes to the peak. So this leads me to think of one thing, is Carrie Emanuel's MPI theory. So I look at the three cases. Routinely we do MPI for Fanapi, Maggie, Malakas. So this is MPI calculating based on SST. We can see that the SST are all similar. Remember, we were talking about similar SST, 29 to 30 degrees. So all these MPI are showing category 5, red everywhere. It's showing that they have the potential to intensify to category 5. However, from this current MPI theory does not include the subsurface condition. So actually, the subsurface condition would not be able to support such intensification to category 5. Because you see, the whole Pacific is category 5 always. I'm trying to think how better to constrain the MPI so that the MPI will not be always overestimate. For example, for Malakas, its MPI was category 5. For Fanapi's MPI was category 3. So I use Jim Price's idea of T100. He proposed the idea of T100. So I then use the T100 to calculate MPI, which I call T100 MPI. So as you can see, for Mackey case, even with the T100, you can see that because of the deep subsurface layer, with the T100, you are still 29 degrees or so. However, with Malakas, you can see the T100 will goes much lower. And with Fanapi, it goes in between. So you can see that the T100 is actually more reflective of what the storm will feel during its intensification. So using T100, I then recalculate the MPI, and I got much closer to the observed peak. So with Maggie, we can have still category 5, but with Madagascar, the MPI dropped to category 2 and FANAPI dropped to category 3. So I'm just proposing this can be a more realistic MPI by incorporation of the subsurface condition than only using the SST information. So very quickly, I also want to make a point on the situation of Meggie. Meggie, it was formed during the La Nina year. So during that time, the warm water was actually piling to my part of the ocean, or that we can see that it was an existing deep ocean, but it was further deepened because of the La Nina effect. So it was it's even more favorable condition because of the presence of La Nina providing even more favorable ocean condition. And finally, this is just an interesting thing, as my student Maggie showed just now, about the cold wake of Super Typhoon Maggie over the South China Sea. We can see that the cooling was actually turning from the right side of the storm to the left side of the storm, and the cooling went down to about 21 degrees. So that is about 9 degrees or 10 degrees cooling as compared to 30 degrees pre-typhoon condition. So we are still investigating the reasons behind it, but it will be a very interesting case to study as compared to the Western North Pacific because of such intense cooling, such intense cold wake. So this is my conclusion. The difference in the ocean subsurface precondition is the critical factor affecting the intensification of Meggie, which is 160 knots, FANAPI category 3 and Madagascar category 2. The difference in the precondition lead to the difference in the typhoon-induced ocean cooling, ultimately cause difference in the air-sea fluxes for intensification. And the deepening of subsurface warm layer due to La Nina contribute to Meggie's extraordinary intensity. And I'm proposing this revision to better constrain for Emmanuel's MPI theory by accounting for the ocean subsurface insulation. And finally, just a quick note that Eric and I and Professor Tang submitted a special session to the AGU Ocean Science Meeting next year, so it will be a good venue for our further report of the ITOP results. Thank you.
A couple of questions.
For the subsurface condition, you have to have an observation, or are the model predictions of that accurate enough for you?
I trust observation, so I use Argo.
Okay.
So these are all the Argo profiles. I actually did a statistic for all the category 5s with respect to translation speed. So I think if a typhoon is moving at 7 meters per second or 9 meters per second, they are really fast, and that very little cooling will be experienced. So yes. So this is, I think 7 to 9, I have to look it up on my paper in 209, but I think 7 to 9 meters per second in translation speed. Very fast.
Okay, let's move. Oh, sorry, Pete.
I heard you quote the JTWC figure for the peak intensity in Meggie, but we had 4 SFMR observations between 80 and 90 meters. Well above their estimate, like 60. So one thing that I've been pushing at NRL is to develop what we call an underground best track, validating various studies like this that makes much more use of the satellite estimates. Now that we're able to validate those satellite estimates, I think it makes more sense to look at that as well.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go move on to the last piece.